I understand that your goal is to build Portland as a unique, human-scale pedestrian city with a thriving economy and committed citizens. If this truly is your goal, then the path of wisdom is to limit building heights to 100 feet or less in the West End and to preserve the architectural legacy of the city and the neighborhood. Small-scale buildings and buildings of historical value create livable cities with proud residents and a vibrant entrepreneurial economy. Thank you. On my written statement, I have referenced the research that I'm basing this on.
Good. Thank you. Thank you all very much.
Have you given Carla your written statement?
Thank you.
Good.
The next three are Jackie Peterson, Brian Newman, and Shirley Rackner, and they'll be followed by Sharon Whitney, Susan Bliss, and Burton Francis.
We'll leave from here.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon. I'm Jackie Peterson. I'm a professor emerita of history, and I'm also representing the Old Town Chinatown Neighborhood Association. I'm its secretary of the board. And I'm sorry that neither the chair or the land use chair, Patrick Gortbanker and Sarah Stevenson, could be here, but I'm here to represent them. But I'm also representing myself and both the Asian American community, which has tirelessly spoken before you and the Planning Bureau and the Planning Commission over the last 18 months. And the letter that you all received today from the Neighborhood Association Board again asks you to take a second look at an amendment that we would like to make in the West Quadrant Plan, which again is focused on the question of heights. We are not satisfied that the current recommendation, which targets part of a National Historic District, the very center of New Chinatown, Japantown, for heights up to 150 feet west of 4th Avenue. We are willing to acknowledge that the block that has been focused on today by Joe Zender, the catalytic block 33, the parking lot, is a place where we're convinced that maybe, in fact, greater heights may be useful there, and so we are willing to recommend to you that we would spot zone that particular block. However, we really do feel that heights of 150 feet in that fragile National Historic District are too high. We also urge you to pass immediately the design guidelines, not only for the Skidmore Landmark District, but also to create new design guidelines for the New Chinatown, Japantown National Historic District. Let me sort of step out of this role for just a second, however, to tell you that I recently heard an interesting lecture by Carl Abbott reporting on a study that he and others at PSU are doing about the way in which cities and states grow. I think that 300,000 people in 25 years is actually a very small number. I think for those who are aspiring or think we may be in danger of becoming Hong Kong, I think that that's absolutely untrue. I think it's unlikely. And it is precisely the fact that we are a small, livable, beautiful city that people want to preserve it. And I think that's probably what's going to happen anyway. 100 years ago, we doubled and then tripled our population in a decade. A projection of 300,000 in 25 years means that we're going to continue to be a small, livable, walkable city, and let's make sure that this council makes that happen. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jackie,
sorry.
It's okay.
Yeah.
If you could possibly give me a map showing which of the proposed height increases around Skidmore the Neighborhood Association supports and which ones you don't, that would be really helpful.
You have all received the letter which has been endorsed by the entire board of the Neighborhood Association
Does it have a map in it?
No, but I can get you a map.
That would be very helpful. Thank you. I just want to make sure that I'm clear on the ones that you support because I'm not as familiar with block 33 or block this or block that. Thank you very much.
Happy to do that. Anybody else?
Okay. Thanks, Jackie. Good afternoon.
Hi. I'm Shirley Rackner. One has only to Google historic preservation and building heights to read about the national debate taking place over historic preservation and scaling down the heights of new buildings across the country. The debate started long ago and has been fought for decades. The iconic Jackie Kennedy Onassis led the fight to save giant historic buildings such as Grand Central Station, which was to be torn down for a skyscraper office building, and when Lafayette Square was to be destroyed for a tall federal building, she worked to preserve the square. She also led the battle to save Columbus Circle from those who would destroy the landmark for yet another tall building in New York City. She defied those who lost track of values beyond how it penciled out. Portland is not Washington, D.C., or New York City, nor am I Jackie Kennedy, obviously. However, I am Shirley Rackner, who has lived here for 49 years and has seen the city grow, prosper, and yet maintain its culture and its niceness. I believe, just as Jackie Kennedy did, that to retain the city's historic buildings is an imperative. Our West End old brick-and-mortar residents that have been built many years ago created the old neighborhood, which has become my neighborhood. If we do not stop tearing down the buildings that have become important to us, then what will we have left? It is now time for the decision makers of Portland to decide what side of history will we be on. And I also.
Thank you.
Shirley, I've been listening to a lot of the testimony today, and one thing that strikes me is almost everyone begins by saying how much they love the city.
Yes.
And Mayor, I'm hoping we can make this an annual hearing.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
Frankly, it's a refreshing antidote to maybe some counter messages we get through the media. Jackie Kennedy was not successful with all the buildings. In fact, one would argue that the behemoth that got built in on the park at the southwest corner of Central Park was not consistent with her vision, and cast an enormous shadow over the corner of the park. But if you have 49 years of distinguished service to our community, so if there are specific buildings that you are especially concerned about, it may not completely fit within this discussion. It may be part of a larger discussion. I hope you will share your view of what are those gems we should keep our eye on as we go through this process. This plan, fortunately, does not go into the Skidmore district and propose changing height. That's a fight we had a few years ago, and it ended with sort of a draw, and we decided to postpone it. But if there are iconic structures that you think are at risk and that we need to be focused on, I hope you will follow up by giving us sort of your list so we can be aware of them as we do our planning.
Absolutely. And on the point of what Jackie couldn't save, we do what we can do.
Oh, amen.
Here's to that. Thank you. Brian, you're next.
Good afternoon. My name is Brian Newman. I'm the Associate Vice President for Campus Planning, Development, and Real Estate at Oregon Health and Science University. On behalf of OHSU, we appreciate the time and energy the city staff and the Planning and Sustainability Commission have put into the West Quadrant Plan. The plan before you today does an excellent job of recognizing future challenges and opportunities and sets the stage for future OHSU investments in South Waterfront District and beyond. Investments that will help ensure Oregon residents of all economic backgrounds have access to the highest quality of care, from primary care to highly specialized medical procedures and treatments to clinical trials. Over a decade ago, OHSU made an important decision to continue to expand our clinical and research operations in Portland instead of moving those operations or expanding those operations in the suburbs. We recognized at the time the challenges of building in a central location on a brownfield versus a greenfield site, but we're confident that in partnership with the city and pursuing flexibility in our own program, we could achieve the ends that the city of Portland and the community expect of us. We're confident that we've achieved that, and today the Collaborative Life Sciences Building and the Center for Health and Healing are a testament to that partnership. And a sign of more to come. OHSU plans to construct three new buildings in the South Waterfront District, totaling a million square feet over the next 4 years. I don't have time to speak to all of those investments, but I wanted to give you one example. We plan to build an 80-bed guest house for patients and their families who need to be close to OHSU, because sometimes for a week and months at a time, to pursue life-saving treatment. To be clear, this is not a service that the market provides. Most of these patients aren't able to pay for lodging. A third of them, based on our own modeling, will pay nothing, and the vast majority will pay less than $20 a night. Nonetheless, it's an essential service that we need to provide, so parents can be close to sick children who are at Dornbecker Children's Hospital, or a cancer patient can receive up to 3 or 4 weeks of outpatient therapy and be close by. I just use that as one example to show that there's a lot we can and we do for to ensure that vulnerable communities are served. Thanks again for this opportunity to support the West Quadrant Plan as it provides a sound framework for all that we do. While our healthcare providers, educators, and researchers touch lives across the state and beyond, Portland is our home and always will be, and we're excited about creating a future with you.
Thank you. I think your testimony affirms this, but let me just double check, and that is everyone obviously is very enthusiastic about the night challenge and
yes, sir.
Is committed to making sure that the last mile is completed and that the funds are raised and for this amazing upgrading of OHSU. Does the plan as it now stands in draft form accommodate the growth that you expect to occur, including the response that you're likely to make to the night challenge?
It does, at least for this planning horizon. It certainly does. And just to be clear, I think we're at about $455 million of that challenge. And the $500 million that OHSU is investing in South Waterfront in this next wave of development is in addition to any of that money,
right.
In addition to the billion-dollar goal that has been set out. But accommodating the Cancer Center, the research, but also the clinical portion, as well as just expanding our clinical enterprise in South Waterfront, is all accommodated as part of this plan.
Great. Thank you. Just wanted to make sure we had that on the record, that we're set up for your success, and obviously we're all supportive of it. So.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Next three, please.
Are Sharon Whitney, Susan Bliss, and Burton Francis, and they'll be followed by Richard Rahm, Liam Thornton, and Tracy Prince.
Afternoon.
I'm Sharon Whitney, and my comments have been covered brilliantly. What am I supposed to do? And now Commissioner Fish is out of the room because he wants to hear praise for Portland.
Well, so do we all.
All right, for you. Okay, it's about livability, and it's what people say when they visit Portland. I've heard it from Europeans and Australians and my own friends from different parts of this country. They invariably say, I could live here.
Mm-hmm.
And you tell them it rains, and it rains a lot, and they still say it. But I could live here. And I love that. I love feeling part of something so special. And I had a lot here about what livability means to me. It's softer than some of the stuff you've heard. But one point I need to make is when you're looking at a historic building, you have to see it in context. You have to see what's next to it. Because we have some of our wonderful, wonderful downtown churches with these spires that look like they're made out of gingerbread, are dwarfed by what's next to them. And you can't look at the horizon and even pick those out because of the, I don't know, the clueless building that went in next to them. Possibly. Anyway, I too am concerned that our quality of life, which is livability, shouldn't be cramped by runaway development. As someone said, we are not Seattle or San Francisco, we're Stumptown. And if you need a model for a good building height, look at the Heritage Tree on Southwest 10th, which is across from the Sculpture Court. It's an American elm. 7 stories tall, over a century old, a vision in every season, and those visitors I'm talking about take lots of pictures of it.
Thank you very much.
Hello, I'm Susan Bliss, and I'm a resident of the West End. As a resident of the West End, I believe the mayor and city council must hear and consider the points of view of citizen residents regarding the West Quadrant plan now being proposed. There is strong evidence that this has not happened to date. I am one among a large group of residents who want you, their representatives, to 1, lower maximum building heights in the West End to 100 feet, 2, delay the City Council vote on said height limits in the current West End plan because the plan is fundamentally flawed both in process and in outcome, especially as regards building heights. 3, reconvene a more representative membership of the West Quadrant Stakeholders Advisory Committee to include all categories of stakeholders, specifically residents, who were largely overlooked in favor of developers and architects the first time around. Not a single resident representative from the West End was included. 4, allow the new group to revisit sections of the West Quadrant plan and register their comments before any vote by the City Council takes place. My last words are a repetition. Lower maximum building heights in the West End to 100 feet. Thank you.
Thank you.
Before I start my comments, Mr. Mayor, I'd like to respond to a question you had, which was about the Pearl. If you look at zoning map 510-3, the Pearl is actually 3 different sections. It's not just one homogenous place. There's the place north of Lovejoy, then there's the place Lovejoy to Hoyt and 405 to the river,
right.
And then there's south of Hoyt down to Burnside, okay?
Right.
So it's not a homogenous thing. Second thing I would say is be careful about when you're looking to what the residents want or don't want. I think that's dependent if you're relying on the Neighborhood Association to how democratic the Neighborhood Association is and how much outreach that Neighborhood Association has done in terms of figuring out what the residents are interested in. And then thirdly, I don't know how many people were actually living north of Lovejoy 15 years ago or something like that. You know, it's a very changing area and a changing demographic. So to begin my comments, my name is Burton Francis. I'm one of the founding members of Preserve the Pearl, a group of homeowners that formed in opposition to the Pearl District Neighborhood Association and its failure to keep the residents of our neighborhood informed on issues of development and livability. We're inspired by the West, our West Side neighbors in Goose Hollow, and we look forward to the day when our voices of the residents are actually heard. The allure of the Pearl can be best experienced along 13th Avenue Historical District, where, as we all know, there's brick buildings and early 20th century warehouses, and they've been turned into lofts and framing studios and shops. But any remaining authenticity in this area is fast becoming lost in the pursuit of huge towers and in their design and in their dominating size, which threatened to drown out the last bit of industrial vibe. The authenticity of what the Pearl is attracts people with, that we as residents enjoy. We know that the area of the Pearl north of Lovejoy is pretty much lost to the coming forest of south waterfront-style skyrises, and that goes directly to your query. But the area where most of our group lives, which is described in that zoning map I referred to, is still a low-slung, Soho, funky warehouse sort of area. Not for long, though. The current zoning height map in our area is 75 feet without any bonuses, and that's consistent with about the 88 feet height of the brick buildings along 13th Avenue. Under the West Quadrant map, however, our area is due to go to 220 feet. That is a tripling in our neighborhood. We in the Preserve the Pearl ask that you delay any approval of the West Quadrant plan and at least begin the discussion of density that was never really undertaken seriously in the SAC. And in this request, we support the so-called minority report. We ask, these are my last comments, we ask that the serious discussion be undertaken to determine if the density that's needed to grow Portland in the next 25 years can be achieved with low and mid-rise buildings, at least in those neighborhoods that have not already been overwhelmed by point tower high-rises. It's our request.
So does your group support leaving the height limits in the Pearl neighborhood at their current heights?
Yeah, we would support that. But, you know, we want to be realistic. I mean, you know, and I want you to understand, we're not against development. We're not against density. There are, to borrow a phrase from a different part of the world, there are facts on the ground now north of Lovejoy that are pretty hard to ignore. And if that area is going to be designated as a kind of a alpha and omega to the south waterfront, I guess that's what's going to happen. But in our neighborhood, which is south of Lovejoy to Hoyt and 405 to the, we desperately would like to retain the integrity of that neighborhood, which also encompasses the 13th Avenue Historic District.
And in your case, it's by keeping the current height limits, whereas in the West End, the request is to reduce them.
Yeah.
Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, the current height limits, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you
all.
Okay. Sorry. The next three are Richard Rom, Liam Thornton, and Tracy Prince.
Thank you.
They'll be followed by Cal Toth, Connie Kirk, and Joan Cavita.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon. I'm Richard Rom. I've been asked to read a statement by Tom Nielsen, who's unable to attend today. These are his comments. I am a West End resident, former mayor of the city of Salem, a person who has been involved in a great deal of public process around a wide range of issues. I ask you to consider the structure for citizen input on the West Quadrant Plan. A significant component of the 2035 plan will set the parameters for how Portland develops over the next 20 years. Despite nominations of very capable and experienced residents of the West End, not one was appointed to this act. Birds, represented by the Audubon Society, had more representation on the SAC than the West End's human residents. The West End is the largely residential component within the Downtown Neighborhood Association, which also contains the Downtown Retail Core and PSU. A planning process which relies on neighborhood associations to represent the will of the residents and businesses within their geographic boundary is only somewhat reasonable in a homogeneous neighborhood with a very sophisticated process of determining the range of sentiments of those who reside and do business in that neighborhood or with an issue on which there is consensus. In an area with diverse interests that comprises Downtown Neighborhood Association, this is ludicrous. With an issue as contentious and potentially problematic as building heights in a residential area, this is a mistake. Recognizing that the process as conducted relied on stakeholders with vested interests, largely but not entirely financial, and did not amply allow for input on building heights, a contentious issue, and that two of the city's own appointed commissions are at odds over the recommendations regarding building heights, the issue of heights warrants an in-depth study and more precision in application, particularly in the West End. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm Liam Thornton with Langley Investment Properties in Portland, Oregon. I'd like to offer a perspective from someone who recently made the decision to invest in the Goose Hollow neighborhood. We made the decision to invest in the Goose Hollow neighborhood because we believe in the city's long-established vision for a high-density, mixed-use, walkable, livable district with accessible transit, consistent with what is shown now in the West Quadrant Plan. Much of the property in Goose Hollow is actually privately owned, not corporately owned, and our purchase of the property was from a private landowner. Moreover, our decision and our purchase price was based on the allowable density and height of that land. In short, land value is based on what you are allowed to do with the property, and people make land investment decisions based upon the certainty found in the zoning code. For those who are advocating a reduction in building heights, while well-intentioned and strong arguments are made in favor of that, reducing building heights in Goose Hollow or elsewhere in the central city is not without consequence. It does reduce economic value and negatively impacts the private landowner. I think it's important to reinforce that the West Quadrant Plan is not proposing or seeking to increase building heights in Goose Hollow. It merely seeks to maintain them at the same level as found in the current and longstanding zoning code. Many of you have talked today about new tools in your toolkit to support public policy objectives given limited funding resources and public funding resources. Certainty of the zoning code is fundamental to the attraction of private investment that would support the broader public policy goals contained in the plan. Additionally, maintaining existing height limits also avoids reductions in current land values and corresponding reductions in property taxes that would further dilute the already limited public resources needed to achieve the public policy and planning goals discussed here today and contained in the West Quadrant Plan. I'd like to state that we support the West Quadrant Plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Tracy Prince. I'm a resident of Goose Hollow, and I'm the newly elected board president. We've had a turn of the Goose Hollow Foothills League. We've had a turnover of 7 new board members who were endorsed by the Friends of Goose Hollow and swept all open seats. I'm one of those. I speak on behalf of the GHFL board, who discussed their discomfort that they felt with GHFL's representation on the West Quadrant Stakeholders Committee.
Thank you.
Especially regarding height limits and removing the required residential overlay. One stakeholder introduced himself as a former GHFL president, but didn't mention that his opinions were not endorsed by the previous or the current board. The official GHFL stakeholder took positions which GHFL minutes show were not endorsed by the board and were simply personal opinions. The board is also concerned that view corridors are not adequately protected and that West Quadrant staff and participants have branded the flats, a term that has not been in use in Goose Hollow before the West Quadrant discussions, and then stated that this area needs rebranding by a developer. So in front of you, there's the official letter that was unanimously presented by the Goose Hollow Foothills League Board. I don't know if you want me to go step by step through our suggested changes.
If you've got them here for us, it would be better if you'd let us to go through that later.
Exactly. So they address our concerns with representation. We unanimously endorse the building height minority report and the environmental report. We request a delay of the vote today because, as the new president, I've heard a lot of people say what Goose Hollow wants on height limits. I'm a little tired of it, and I've called for a vote of the membership so that the residents, the members, can speak and can vote on height limits, bonuses, and FAR. We were misled during the West Quadrant process. We were told that we could not discuss lowering height limits by planning staff. So we plan to discuss that. And then finally, a quick issue is on page 171. This is my personal issue. Is there's a map problem in this plan. Regardless of what you saw presented by the planning staff today, the map that's in the draft only shows the height limits are only showing the full build-out of every bonus possible on every property on the West Quadrant, as if that is going to happen on every property. That rarely happens that a property gets its full bonus. So it seems like, just looking at the map, that it's kind of a deregulation of bonuses. I think in order to make sure everybody understands it's not, that somewhere in this plan should be today's current base height limits. I had to look in another city document to find that information. So I'm asking for the current base heights. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
That's a good point. Thank you. So, Tracy, just to clarify, the Goose Hollow Foothills League does support changing that block from RHD to CXD as long as it does have the continued residential requirement?
Yes. There was discussion about that, and that was unanimous to change it with as long as it has a residential overlay. What most of us don't want to see of the current board is we don't want to see a standalone parking structure, and a residential overlay will require that. We've actually offered the MAC to come and give us that exact proposal that they offered on Block 7 and propose it over on 20th on the lot right here, and we'd go for it. Exactly the same, bury the parking, and that would support that possible proposal. So we understand that some flexibility is needed, but stripping off the required residential overlay is only good for developers and is not good for the neighborhood. We're a dense urban neighborhood, and we need 24-hour eyes on the ground, which residential development gives.
Thank you. My second question is, historically, the hollow is the better term?
I literally wrote the book on it.
I know you did.
So it really drives me crazy. I never heard that term used before. Nick Clark talked about talking to his family who've been in Goose Hollow. His father's been in Goose Hollow since 1938 when he lived there as a child. Bud Clark lived there. So nobody remembers it being called the flats. This was a term that either the participants or the staff of the West Quadrant process started using because maybe they didn't know. It should be called the hollow. The lower elevations at the base of the hills are the hollow. That's the hollow.
Thank you.
It really is infuriating to see them putting as a line item that they literally ask a private developer to rebrand us. And that just makes me pretty angry. So and also you ask about the 405. In every iteration, I've been involved with the Goose Hollow board for almost a decade, off and on, and checking in and out. Every iteration, the board, no matter what our arguments are and how we disagree with each other, we all like the I-405 cap.
Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm. Potentially what maybe we might do on that is take out the city as the implementers, as was suggested by Patricia Gardner, if somebody else is willing to pay for it.
I agree. In 10 years, it'll be worth it for a developer to cap that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
The next three are Cal Toth, Connie Kirk, and Joan Kavitka, and they will be followed by Robert Wright, Captain Peter Wilcox, and Ruth Ann Barrett.
Welcome.
Go ahead. Okay. So my name is Cal Toth. I live in Goose Hollow. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to all of you. I have submitted my full testimony since I had to cut quite a few paragraphs out of the one I have right here in front of me. I moved to Portland in 2001 from Vancouver, British Columbia, because Portland was and remains to this day a human scale city that avoided the vertical sprawl of Vancouver, Seattle, San Francisco, New York, and other cities, large cities like that. Over the 20-year period, I watched the neighborhoods of Vancouver abutting the city core, Falls Creek, so it's a little bit like here, Falls Creek, Yale Town, and Cole Harbor, they're called, rapidly littering the landscape with virtually indistinguishable glass towers, creating skylines similar to those of so-called world cities of the Far East. Not surprisingly, Vancouver's embrace of high towers was made possible by land use policies that attracted huge inflows of global monies, mostly from Southeast Asia. Instead of fostering affordable housing and livable neighborhoods in Vancouver, this wave of high-rise construction created a glut of luxury housing for the very wealthy, many of them visitors from other lands, and many occupying them only part-time. This oversupply of unaffordable housing has pushed ordinary Vancouver citizens further into less affluent neighborhoods, including the city's downtrodden east side, which is a druggy area. Apparently, taxing empty units has become a challenge and a hot election issue of late. There are other ways of achieving density, not just height, as some people have mentioned. I hope we can avoid such problems. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Okay. Hi, my name is Connie Kirk. I live in Goose Hollow.
Connie, we missed you.
Yeah. It's been much too long. Glad to be back. I urge you to vote to lower the height limits in the West Quadrant. You know, throughout the West Quadrant process, there's been an assumption that those who oppose skyscrapers in residential neighborhoods are ignorant of the planning process. You know, on the contrary, many are urban planners, engineers, historic preservationists, and property owners. They're the gatekeepers of unchecked growth, vertical sprawl, and economic disparity. And this love of skyscrapers, it's an enticing apple. But replicating New York and Portland brings risk. And having lived in skyscrapers for many years in New York City, I concur completely with Suzanne Leonard's analysis. It really creates a life of atomization. It dilutes civic involvement. Manhattan today has evolved into a playground for those who are wealthy enough to afford high-rise living. But the middle classes and the working poor, they've bottomed out. They have to commute long hours to serve the city's upper classes. While I was there, the elderly even had to resort to living in their storage lockers. It's just disgraceful, the elderly living in their storage lockers. Now, I've lived on both sides of the economic aisle, and I just don't want this to happen in Portland. As for the GHFL, it is true, Dr. Prince said, they were voted in unanimously, and they were voted in a landslide by Goose Hollow residents. So when they speak, they do speak for us. Also note Dr. Toth's comments on Vancouver, British Columbia. It's a classic example of power point tower development, and Vancouver's papers consistently report on this stripping away of history. I would like to leave you with a few few final thoughts. Commissioners, you can feel proud that Portland's model is not saturated with point towers. Feel good about that. And I leave you also with a report from the BBC News in January 12, 2012. Barclays Capital analysts had this to say. Often the world's tallest buildings are simply the edifice of a broader skyscraper building boom, reflecting a widespread misallocation of capital and an impending economic correction. With that, I urge you again to vote to lower the height limits in the West Quadrant, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
I am Joan Kavitka, an involved neighborhood advocate who understands the livability of South Auditorium District. I represent a neighborhood group called SAGE, S-A-G-E, South Auditorium Greenway Environs. We are honored to appear before you today, and we speak as a voice for the hundreds of residents who live downtown, from the Keller Auditorium along the Halpern Open Sequence to the Lee Kelly Sculpture Park. Over the past year, we have worked closely with the City of Portland's Bureau of Planning and Sustainability in defining the needs of our historic neighborhood. SAGE appears before you today to endorse the focus on neighborhood livability within Central City 2035 West Quadrant Plan. West Quadrant Plan links the insights of 21st century urban planning with the foresight of Portland designers of 50 years ago. Briefly stated, beginning in the 1960s, the renewal of South Auditorium District brought Portland national distinction as a pioneer in urban design that promoted the values of sustainability and livability. The creation of super blocks dedicated to tree-lined pedestrian paths, cascading waterfalls, hills and valleys brought daily interaction with nature into the built environment of live, work, and play. Lawrence Halpern's design elements still today connect the beauty and harmony of the Willamette River and Cascade Mountains within a freshly imagined urban landscape. Existing tall towers where many of us live do not dwarf nature's aliveness in our neighborhood. As development moves forward in the West Quadrant in general and South Auditorium District in particular, we want to remain true to the harmony and balance within our urban environment. In closing, SAGE knows that high-density living need not overwhelm us. A varied landscape with open spaces and green canopy, diverse building heights, mixed-use functions, and daily encounters with the joys of nature, art, and culture should intertwine. Our conclusion is best summed up by saying SAGE supports urban development in the South Auditorium District that brings the SAGE wisdom of nature into our city planning. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay. The next three are Robert Wright, Captain Peter Wilcox, and Ruth Ann Barrett. And they'll be followed by Lynn Graner, and Randy and Tina Wyszynski.
All right, go ahead. Welcome.
My name is Robert Wright. My wife and I have lived in the West End since 2006. We returned to the city where we were born, raised, and educated. We are from Southeast Portland. There are many fine Southeast neighborhoods, but we were drawn to the West End with its urban vitality and livability. I am very proud to say that Portland has been a world leader in many things, urban development among them. People are drawn to Portland not only to learn, but to live. Five annual International Making Cities Livable conferences have been held in Portland. Portland has become the model for urban planners from around the world. Areas of the West Quadrant, the West End, Goose Hollow, the Pearl, are at or approaching the sweet spot of urban development, the fine balance between urban livability and density. Proposed maximum building heights will upset that balance. Clustered, high-rise residential buildings and livability are most directly at odds. There appears to be a school of thought among some city planners that we should copy larger cities with clustered high-rises rather than lead as one of the most livable cities on the planet. Those involved in the development of the West Quadrant Plan have publicly countered that all new buildings won't be expected to reach legislated maximums, so not to worry. This is naive or dishonest. It is a hope, not a plan. Other cities have accommodated increased density without resorting to vertical sprawl, with tall, dark canyons that limit street-level access to light and air, becoming gusty wind tunnels on windy days. They have proved that urban density can be increased with mid-rise buildings while preserving historic structures and heritage. If the proposed plan is adopted, city planners will still visit Portland years from now, but then it will be to study the post-mortem of what went wrong. Admittedly, the ability to build tall residential buildings packed together would attract and benefit developers and increase the city coffers with higher tax revenue. But that would come at the greater expense of what makes Portland's urban areas attractive and livable. By the time the comprehensive plan is approved and buildings are allowed to the proposed maximum heights, we grayheads will be long gone. Our children and grandchildren will live with the consequences of your planning. I strongly urge you to lower maximum building heights in the West Quadrant plan.
Thank you. Mr. Wilcox.
Hello. Greetings. I'm Peter Wilcox. I live in Northeast Portland. I'm a licensed captain. That's why I'm Captain Peter Wilcox. And I'm also president of Columbia Riverkeeper, although I'm speaking on my own behalf today. I actively participated in the Central Reach and West Quadrant Plan meetings in Charette's. And I'd like to give you briefly visit the current state of the city regarding waterfront, regarding some prior plans, and then also mention some ideas. And I won't get to all of them. As noted in the West Quadrant Plan's executive summary, item number one, the most northern topic generated more shared enthusiasm among participants than activating the Willamette River. That's what I'll talk about mostly. Yet the river activation recommendations in the West Quadrant and Central Plans could be considerably bolder and greener and even have a bigger economic impact, in my opinion, and will still leave us behind other urban waterfront cities when we're done with what we have there now. The 1998 Central Plan, City Plan, called for a network of water taxis. That's a topic I've been interested in for a long time. Some of you know. Many of those at the hearings who spoke about this are sorry that already hasn't happened. And then 13 years later, in the River Renaissance Plan, this was again championed and challenged the city to connect quote-unquote, new and existing neighborhoods to and across the river through multiple means that include water taxis. What can be done about a bolder, greener plan that includes water transport? Here's a few ideas. First, either complete the implementation of the current Waterfront Park Master Plan or update it and follow through on those recommendations. Hopefully, either way, a river-connected Portland will emerge using vessels that leave the river cleaner and the city greener behind their small wakes. Second, move up the two existing West Quadrant River transport actions from 6 to 20 years for another couple of decades to 2 to 5 years, at least the one that studies the funding that's available. Third, the Portland Waterfront Alliance is a group that I'm part of that made up of organizations and individuals who spend a disproportionate amount of time looking at the city from the water and its rivers. And we're creating and we'll be sharing a vision, a really bold vision for activating the downtown waterfront with new placemaking and a river-connected city centered on the James Beard Public Market. I have a couple other ideas regarding funding for this and especially on the state of the science restoration that are on my letter.
Good. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Very much.
Thanks. Welcome.
Hi. I'm Ruth Ann Barrett, and I'm going to start my presentation by admitting I'm a near nobody. I'm a somebody in terms of sustainability. I'm a sustainability advocate. I have a site, earthsaves.tv, and about 10,000 people come to it to hear the voices of sustainability each month. And I'm here because I've been starting a PDX downtowner. I started it 3 or 4 years ago, channel on YouTube. And I pretty much do what I like, and I interview people who interest me, and I'm creating some pieces of work around educating our citizens, who, if you remember, the research indicates that we're really quite unaware and clearly not very knowledgeable about the ABCs of government. So here I am, a marketer, and I did something called Spongy Parking Lots. And it's a short 3 minute. And what it does is talk about, you know, taking the parking lots that surround me. And now I'm going to admit something to everyone. I live in Chinatown. I know you never get to meet people much who live in Chinatown, certainly not in the new Chinatown, Japantown Historical District, which I'm very proud of. But yes, I'm here. And so one of the things that we have in the area is parking lots galore. And they need to be spongy. And one of the interesting things is the quadrant plan, which I think is miraculous, and I have nothing but the highest respect for everyone who contributed to that. But there's also this minority report thing that I got my hands on. And one of the things they talk about is specificity. And you know what? In my neighborhood, looking up, if you will, to this plan, which again, I have the greatest respect for, where is, you know, what we used to call an MBO objectives? How many old buildings? How many abandoned buildings? How many unsafe buildings? And of those, in your 5-year action plan or your 35-year action plan, do you intend to restore? That's all I want. I want to know if those 3 parking lots around me are going to be there for the next 30 years. Because then I have even more fuel to say, we need to make them spongy today. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Appreciate that. And what you'll find, I think, in Portland is almost anybody can propose a good idea and have it get adopted. So thank you.
Thank you for the encouragement.
Next 3 are Lynn Grenner, I believe is the last name, and then Randy and Tina Wyszynski.
Okay.
Sure. Let's go ahead and go with Tim Block now. And then they'll be followed by Michael Mahaffey, Kate Washington, and Improni Boyle.
Okay, I think we may be coming down the home stretch, but welcome.
Okay, my name is Lynn Grannon, and I represent Oregon Nikkei Endowment. We are a nonprofit. I serve on the board, the executive board of the organization. We have 2 projects. One is the Japanese American Historical Plaza that's on the north waterfront, and the other is the Oregon Nikkei Legacy Center, which is on Northwest 2nd. Before I go on, I use the word Nikkei. It refers to anybody of Japanese descent who resides outside of Japan. So that would include from my immigrant grandparents down to my grandchildren. We are all Nikkei. Okay. The Japanese American Historical Plaza was built 25 years ago. It was a vision of one of Portland's greatest visionaries, Bill Naito. And with the help of the community, our Nikkei community, and with the help of Portland City, including the Portland Parks and Rec, the Metropolitan Arts Commission, and the Portland Development Commission, we made Bill's vision come to reality. It tells the Nikkei story from Japanese immigrants down through their settlement in Oregon, and then their lives through the wartime when they were incarcerated, through resettlement. And it tells it in through art, in bronze etchings, and through poetry etched in stone. Bill liked to refer to it as the Bill of Rights Plaza because it evokes for many of us the rights guaranteed to all Americans through the Bill of Rights. And he had those etched in stone, and that's the beginning of the plaza. Our other project is the Oregon Nikkei Legacy Center, which is located in Old Town Chinatown. And many people don't know that prior to May 1942, it was known as Japantown. At that time, it had over 100 businesses, Japanese-owned businesses. And, of course, that all ceased to exist after May 1942 when everyone was removed. Our Legacy Center is located in one of the original Japanese businesses. And I'm a retired educator. So when we have our thousands of visitors that have come through both of our projects in the last 20 and 25 years, it is really powerful when we tell the stories of our ancestors and our legacy, and we are in the actual buildings where they worked and they lived. And as many people have mentioned, the legacy that we have here in Portland is so important, it's so rich, it's culturally rich, and we hope to be able to preserve this. And I would like to thank the Portland Bureau of Sustainability to go through this process with us and discuss how we can work together and maintain and the rich history that we have for future generations. We do support the height limit only on block 33. I think there are three areas that were noted in the maps. And we also support the immediate adoption of the nomination for the new Chinatown, Japantown National Historic District. And thank you for working with us thus far.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Good evening.
Hi, I'm Tina, and I'm here testifying on behalf of my husband, Randy, who could not be here because he's out of town. So, here we go. Hello, councilors and mayor. Thank you very much for the opportunity to appear before you. As a seven-year Goose Hollow resident and former GHFL board member, that's Goose Hollow Foothills League, I am for more than 4 years, I am deeply optimistic for the potential that Goose Hollow has as a neighborhood. Being as close in as we are to one of the most dynamic downtowns in the country, with careful planning, there is no reason that our neighborhood shouldn't become one of the most desired locations to live, work, and play in the USA. It is convenient, historic, and diverse. I feel confident that if we can focus on the safety, livability, parkways, public spaces, availability of retail, and family living, we can achieve that dream. I say this with experience, as I have lived in nearly every quadrant of the city and have been involved in neighborhood associations throughout as well. It is through these experiences that I chose to devote my time to the Goose Hollow cause. I feel it is a diamond in the rough. I was very excited to participate in not only the visionary conversations that we were able to have during the past 4 years through the VRC, but as well in, through participation in the design charrettes that were held in conjunction with the City of Portland. The great thing about an open and thorough process is that you can't complain about it once it is completed. From past experience, done properly, which I firmly believe this process was done not only properly but robustly, I have seen this process leave some incredible legacies and build some great relationships throughout the neighborhood. I must admit that in the beginning, I expected that the city would have its own agenda. However, I was pleasantly surprised to read how thoughtful, thorough, and representative the results and recommendations that were recently published were. It is nice to see the results of careful collaboration when all parties are respected and their viewpoints taken into consideration. I am happy to say that the recent study was not only representative of our neighborhood, our entire neighborhood, not just one building. It left me excited to be visionary enough to live in and own a piece of Goose Hollow. As a resident and former GHFL board member, I fully support the West Quadrant plan and implementation and the capping of the 405. Thank you.
Thank you. Mahaffey, welcome.
Good afternoon. I'm Michael Mahaffey, Stasis Foundation, 742 Southwest Vista Avenue. I'm a practicing urban planner and urban designer, and I also do research and education in sustainable urban development. And many of my good friends and colleagues have been part of developing the West Quadrant Plan. And so nothing I say is meant to impugn their hard work or others throughout this process. But as I have shared with staff previously, there is research evidence on tall buildings that shows that they can fuel demolition of historic structures, they can exacerbate economic inequality, they have significant impacts of shading, wind, view, and other factors, and they can degrade the livability of the critical public realm. The claim that tall buildings will promote more sustainable development is contradicted by a large and growing body of research evidence, and I'd be happy to share more of that with you. I do understand that tall buildings offer attractive profits, particularly for historic, affordable housing. That's something a goal that I share very much as well. But I think we have to recognize the dangers in this kind of supply side economic strategy, deregulating so that the wealth will trickle down to the rest of the city and to affordable housing and the other things that we want to do. In many cities around the world, the results of this strategy have been, to put it bluntly, dismaying. Some of my own research for the Urban Land Institute has documented how global capital is currently flooding into high-rise projects and profoundly changing the character of cities around the globe. And unfortunately, we are not immune here. Up to now, Portland has been a champion of an alternative path to urban economic development, a Jane Jacobs model, if you will, promoting a diversity of people, of businesses, of building types and ages. And I think it's urgent to secure and to build upon this prime economic asset and to maintain our global leadership, for that really is what it is, and not throw that away in a rush to become a pale imitation of some other city we wish we were. We are a great city already, and to that treasure, let us first do no harm. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thank you all. Okay. How many more do we have left signed up?
Sir, are you going to put your testimony in?
Michael, are you going to leave us a copy of your testimony? Are you going to leave us a copy of your...
If you leave your testimony with the clerk...
Actually, I have already submitted that to your staff. Everyone, all the council members have...
Okay.
The commissioners have copies of those already. Good. I'll be happy to furnish additional
information. As long as we've got it in the record, that's fine.
Yeah, we have. There's a white paper that actually sets out many of the citations and the sort of the evidence-based approach that we're advocating. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Okay.
I believe we have 30 or so more.
I don't think that's still true in the room, but how many people still planning to testify? Okay, we're down to a relatively manageable number. Why don't you call them? We'll take a five-minute break and then come back and try to finish it out.
Just a stretch.
Stretch break. We've been at it for 3 hours.
Mayor, at 5:45, I have to leave for a regional water consortium.
Yeah, I got to leave then too, but it looks like we got about 12 people left, so.
All your fault.
What is it? Spongy.
You have to address both issues. All your fault.
We've been a lot of fun.
The spongy.
Yeah, you have any idea what that is? I didn't want to ask because I didn't want a long explanation. But... Spongy parking lot.
Casey, how you doing?
I won't be up for a little bit, though, right?
Right.
Oh, you can leave PowerPoint open because it's in a PowerPoint.
I need to get it this way.
Oh, okay.
Oops.
But yeah, it's that very first document.
I've been doing both now for a couple weeks.
Are you just trying to put it on?